Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, which is about waiting for the Doom Patrol comic, which is sometimes longer than other times. But at the moment, we're in between, so let's do it.
Sounds good. Yes. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can find us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which has companion posts and lots of other good Doom Patrolness. Good Doom Patrolness? Doom Patrol goodness. You know what I mean. That's done by our Doom Bro, Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Hello, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And if you want to talk to our sentient show Twitter account, that is called Wilfred, and he is at WFDPod.
Hello, humans.
And we are sponsored by Comicosity.
Yes, comicosity.com. Excellent website for all the comic book news, reviews, and previews. And just, yeah, a great site to check out all the comic book love. So check them out. So, Paul, how have you been since we were last on air?
Well, I've been all right. I have been reading some comics. I've been organizing some things for next year in the world of podcasting. I'm not going to spoil too much, but it might be about JL May. Anyway.
JL May 3.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I'm up to date on The Walking Dead, which is good. The TV show, not the comic.
Right.
I'm slightly behind on the comic. Apart from that, nothing too exciting.
Okay.
Might have rewatched The Force Awakens for some reason.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. What about you, Mike?
Let me see. I joined a gym.
Really?
Yes. So I'm lifting weights and hurting muscles and, you know, turning into Thor, but it's a good Thor. what else? I still haven't read any comics. My to read pile hasn't increased. I just haven't bought any or read any of late, other than the ones we'll be talking about this episode. I have, however, discovered Justice League Unlimited. I know I'm like 13 years late.
So good.
But I was out doing a bit of Christmas shopping and you know, errands and that, and I was just having a look around the store I was in. I thought, I'll check out some DVDs, you know, and they had them there, seasons 1 and 2, for a decent price for both of them. And I thought, you know what, I'm worth it. And I thought I'd never seen any of them, but it turns out I had seen one episode on TV, but like only in the last year or two, and that was the Booster Gold centric story called The Greatest Story Never Told.
Oh, that is such a good story, that one.
Where everyone keeps saying, thank you, Green Lantern. And he's like, I'm not Green Lantern.
Yeah. And is that the one with Elongated Man as well?
Yes, yes. Yeah. He and Elongated Man get put on crowd control while the rest of them are fighting, I think it's Mordru, the sorcerer.
Yeah.
And there's all chaos and havoc everywhere. And it was such a good episode. But I'm... other than that, I don't think I've seen any JLU before, and I'm loving every minute of it. I just, I love that DC animated universe, and it's so much fun. Oh.
That one where Wonder Woman gets turned into a pig.
Yes! And the guy comes after her, and he's got the shotgun, and Wonder Pig still has the silver bracelets on. I thought, don't tell me she's actually got it. Yep, she's going to deflect the bullets.
So good.
Oh, and the tension between Diana and Bruce. Oh, my gosh. It's,
sexy tension.
Sexy tension in animated form. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that has been a highlight of the past week for me, finally getting to see those. I've got some of the Justice League episodes. They did a couple of small packs where they'd have like four episodes that were two-parters. Yep. So I've got some of those. But now it makes me want to track down everything.
Yeah.
Because there's one story where the Amazo android returns from outer space. And it has all the heroes trying to protect Lex Luthor, of all people.
Yeah.
What? And I realized, oh, that ties into something that happened in the previous show. So I must have it all now. So
There's even bits of Batman Beyond in it, I think, by the end.
Yes, yeah, there is an upcoming story where they see the future heroes as well. So but it's so much fun, though. Such good fun.
Well done. Good week in comicking.
Well, comic related for me. At least you actually read some comics. Oh dear. All right. Let's keep things jolly and lively and laughter filled, and let's go check out what's going down on Durrington Way.
Sure. So, going down on Durrington Way, we get to see that there is a lovely image of Terry Nunn.
And oh, yes.
She is holding her arm out and smiling and gesturing in the sky, and it looks like they're a sort of, you know, those sort of comical version of protons and electrons and that sort of thing. This is a very blobby and coney, but they seem to have arms and legs as though that people have suddenly been turned into stuff. And they're sort of floating in the air. You know what I think this is related to?
What's that?
Shit.
The Wonder Food, you mean?
Yes. I would hazard a guess that this is to do with that, and it's coming up in probably the next issue or two. Mm. Probably the next one.
Okay.
So it's probably sneaky. Nick has drawn this a couple of months ago, and it will be in the next issue.
Fingers crossed. At this stage.
Yeah. Just speaking about the delays, I don't think it's Nick. I think Nick is one hell of an artist, and he would, you know, if he had a script in front of him, he would be working on it solidly. So, you know, I suspect it's all to do with Gerard. Not to diss him, but, I mean, he is running an imprint, organizing a crossover. Meanwhile, he's got Umbrella Academy 3 that he's trying to get up and going, and Umbrella Academy, the TV show, has been picked up.
So he is
probably a very busy boy at the moment.
Yes.
Yeah. So that would be why I think things are late.
Yeah, well, I've always had the suspicion that he has been busy running the imprint.
Yeah.
And which is fair enough, you know, people get busy in that. But at the same, and I think it's great for him professionally and artistically to have so much on his plate. But at the same time, you know, the thing that us Doom Patrol fans are hanging out for is the thing that's suffering the most from what it appears.
Yeah. And I mean, my fear too is that, you know, Nick Darrington, one hell of an artist, probably, you know, highly in demand now, being probably getting offers from Marvel and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, he probably will walk at one point if this, you know, this schedule can't get itself together. You know, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
If Nick is off the book with issue 13 or something, you know, 12 issues and done. Wouldn't surprise me one bit. But I hope that's not the case because he's probably the best new artist to come along in a few years. And, well, not that he's new, but, you know, new to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I just want to keep seeing him drawing the best comic ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a way, I hope that Way and Darrington are the new Drake and Premiani.
Oh, you know? Nice call.
Yeah. That'd be nice. But, yeah, it'll be understandable if it doesn't quite work out that way. I mean, not a lot of creative teams have that long a run these days, unfortunately. So, yeah.
Yep. And speaking of the current run, we also got a Facebook post from Edwin Latore about issue 9, the last one we had. And it's worth discussing here because it triggers some thoughts for me as well. So here he goes. This is what he says. Some thoughts just occurred to me with the recent reveal about the two villains from the beginning of the latest issue of Doom Patrol you mentioned in episode 113. You mentioned that the disappointment was retconning the Doom Patrol. What if there's more to it than that? The official beginning of this arc started with the sudden return of Niles Calder, red-haired and bent on leading the Doom Patrol again. His methods of doing so was to make them exactly what they were in the 60s. It did not go so well. And the next issue gives us imagery of characters being stored in long boxes. Then this issue has a very Silver Age character as the new evil god of heroes and characters we haven't seen since issue 4 of volume 1. There seems to be this push to revive a lot of classic Doom Patrol stuff. They are, the disappointment, the writers, plumbing the depths to remember the past and change the present to more properly align to it, but the modern patrol always rejects it. Not to navel-gaze too much, lying, but this reads a little like meta-commentary on how fans trying to impose their idea of how the Doom Patrol should be based on the version of it they remember, whether it be the classic 60s run or the Morrison version. Meanwhile, the modern patrol are not having any of it, asserting their own identity of who they are right now. Of course, this doesn't answer the question about why Cliff was in that sandwich. What do they call it?
The Euro.
The Euro. Yes. Why it was a different world. Why Larry was randomly merged with an alien and dumped back on Earth. The nature of those lives he lives while asleep and how they're more normal than the world they're actually living in. Which leads to all sorts of questions about whether anything we're actually reading is actually happening. The significance of Danny being used to kill the god of superheroes, then creating Casey as a comic book character in an arc about someone trying to retcon reality by treating the Doom Patrol like comic characters in-universe. Theories for another day, perhaps. I'm absolutely certain everything about all this ties back to an overarching theme about the nature of their reality, and I can't wait to read more. I think you're really onto something, Edwin, too. Yeah, there's definitely all those things are sort of, you know, tickling our brains as we read this. I mean, we've had a comic where they literally had to burn down their childhood comic book store to move on.
Yeah, true.
Remember that? Yeah. It was that comic shop in Dannyland, which is, you know, just like a comic book store of, you know, someone's childhood, and they burnt it to the ground to escape. And, you know, there seems to be an element of that. They are, you know, tearing down the original things and building new things. And, yeah, it's very meta.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's one of the good things about the book is it certainly it's food for thought in a very rich way. And it keeps giving us, you know, yummy, yummy thought meals, doesn't it?
It does. Well, yes, there's still, as Ed says, you know, there's still lots that has to be answered, like the Euro and the Euro world and the relationship between Larry and Key. And, interesting about Danny being used to kill one god and then create a new being himself. Yeah.
Hmm.
Lots of good stuff.
Excellent. Yes. All right, but that's it for Darrington Way today.
Cool. Hey, can you hear that ticking?
I can.
Cool. It's not just me then. Thank God. Look, behind you, it's the Doom Clock.
Why is it always behind me?
Because it's stalking you. So as we gaze upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, it's telling us that the last Doom Patrol book we had came out 3 weeks ago, issue 9 of volume 6, which we covered back in episode 112, and gave us the return of Mr. Nobody, yes, and his all-new, all-different Brotherhood of Nada, yes, plus the introduction
and his daughter.
Yes, Terry Nunn.
Confirmation.
Yes, and her awesome zebra suit. I love that thing she has on that cover. Anyway, plus we got introduced to the disappointment and we're given some hints to his nefarious plans for retconning all of reality.
Wow.
Issue 10 is, at this stage, scheduled for release on January 24th, 2018, which is just 6 weeks away, Paul.
A mere 6 weeks?
At this stage. But this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's amazing lot of comics, well, actually going on sale just before this week in Doom Patrol history, because it was hard to actually find something that came out this week, but going on sale for $3.99 American on December 9th of 2009, with a cover date of February 2010, was issue 5 of Doom Patrol Volume 5. The creative team of Keith Giffen, Josu Justiniano, John Livesay, Patrick Brosso, and Guy Major gave us the story titled Back in Black, which saw the newly returned team caught in the clutches of their dearly departed former teammates as the DCU was drowning in the dead, thanks to the Blackest Night event.
Mm. You know, Guy Major always makes me think he's an astronaut. He's just got the perfect astronaut name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he could be Major Guy Major. Come in, Major Guy Major.
Boom tish.
Oh, well.
Plus, sorry. In that issue, we also got a backup story from Giffen, J. Mark D. Matthias, Tim Levins, Dan W. Davis, Travis Lanham, and Guy Major again, or Major Guy Major. And this story starred the Metal Men. And they took on a clique of deadly mannequins in a story called Department Store Doom.
Nice.
That was a good backup run, that Metal Men.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Bonus-tacular.
Yes. But unfortunately, we are yet to cover any issues from this run of the Doom Patrol. But it's safe to say that we're going to get to them next year, in 2018.
Wow.
We're getting towards the end of some stuff. But anyway, you'll have to wait for next year for that. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Ashford, what is Straight Out of Gallifrey?
Straight Out of Gallifrey is a podcast where Josh and I talk about Doctor Who episodes, classic and new, featuring other Time Lords as well as the Doctor.
There are other Time Lords?
Oh, yes. It started all the way back with the first Doctor, William Hartnell.
Oh yeah, you told me about that, the Time Meddler.
That's correct, Kirsten.
Where can I find the episodes?
You can always go to straightoutofgallifrey.lipson.com.
I don't think I'll remember that.
Just add us on Twitter. We are So Gallifrey, like S-O Gallifrey.
Twitter feeds move too fast. I always miss stuff.
Well, subscribe to us on iTunes. That way, every time we upload a new episode, you will get the alert on your smarty device.
Cool, thanks. I can't wait to listen.
Okay, Kirsten, see you later.
Why are you walking into that blue box?
I'm going to have a couple of drinks with Mother Teresa of Calcutta. See ya.
You always say that. Whoa, it is real. So he does have drinks with Mother Teresa of Calcutta.
Doomsplaining, where we explain something to do with the Doom Patrol, which is being doomsplained by us right now. And this week we are talking about Doom Patrol Volume 4, the John Byrne volume, as we like to call it, Issue 5 and Issue 6. And Mike is going to take us through number 5. So, Mike, hit it.
I'd love to hit something. Yes, Doom Patrol Volume 5, Volume 4. Cover dated December 2004, but actually went on sale October 27th of that year for $2.50. Edited by Mike Carlin, written and penciled by John Byrne, Doug Hazelwood on the inks, Jared K. Fletcher did the letters, and Alex Blayart did the colours. And the cover of it, shows, well, kind of Robot Man split into two different forms. His regular orange copper side on the left and a new blue steel form on the right.
Mm.
There's a big scary looking robot thing behind him on the blue steel side and Reacher and Negman behind him on the left. He's looking all angry and arms raised and it looks like he's saying, "Blue steel!" Thanks to the placement of that caption.
Oh, get me out of here, this comic. Sorry.
Could be that too.
Yes.
But yes, this issue, Hearts of Steel, opens upon a heavily guarded facility in the suicide slums of Metropolis, where we meet Baroness von Hartag and her young female companion, servant girl, valet, whatever you want to call her. They're having a large metal box unloaded from the back of their truck, before being given directions to within the facility. Strangely, the Baroness confirms with someone called Cliff that he's receiving their signal, before they reach another guard who ushers them in to witness the start of another bout of robots fighting. As the wild crowd cheers on the rampaging robots, the Baroness cries out, "Oh my god, it's worse than I imagined."
Meta.
Yeah. As her young companion begins to wonder why their friend Cliff would put himself in the middle of such a situation, the Baroness interrupts her. "Shush, me son, we have company." They're greeted by the owner of the establishment, Max Sampson, who makes them watch the end of the fight before answering their questions. And they see the winning robot knock the head off its opponent right off its body. The head flies through the air, crashing at Misun's feet, and the damaged casing falls open. "Hey, that's a brain in there," Misun remarks, before Sampson crushes said brain beneath his boot, replying, "Yes, some of the builders use cow brains as part of the hardware, but they're permanently retired once they lose a bout."
Yeah.
Right.
Cows are notoriously aggressive.
Well, you know, carrying all that gas around, sure, I'd be a bit tetchy too.
Cows, perfect fighting machines.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, they're deadly. He then leads the two women further into the facility to a holding room where their metal box is being stored. Samson asks if he can get a look at their robot, and so the Baroness obliges, opening the casing up and revealing a humanoid-looking figure encased in blue steel. The Baroness asks Samson why he calls it a mystery droid, and he replies that it's rare for any robots entered into his competition to be configured in an anthropomorphic shape such as this. And it's also strange that he couldn't find any mention anywhere on the World Wide Web of Baroness Katarina von Hartag, nor her famous blue steel fighting machine. And so he pulls a gun on them, demanding answers.
Shit, we're doing.
Yeah, we weren't going to gasp. Anyway, we then cut to the DBHQ in Key Mondaz in Florida 12 hours earlier.
Ah, classic. Classic flashbacking.
I'll burn. You love your flashbacks. Nudge has gathered the rest of the patrol to look at a video of one of these robot fights. At first, no one seems overly concerned until the chief recognizes a man in the crowd, a Dr. Vidalian. But that doctor is thought to be dead. And back in the present, Misun defuses the situation with the gun-wielding Samson by telling him that everything is fine and that he actually did find info on the Baroness. And though confused, he repeats her words back to her. Just then, Dr. Vidalian enters the room, wondering why Samson is delaying his guests from joining him. After quickly admiring the blue steel robot, he whisks the ladies away to meet the other owners. And once the room is empty, Blue Steel comes to life and begins sneaking around the facility. From the shadows, he sees the victor of the previous fight being walked into the room by two men, and the robot is demanding that it be given its quote-unquote juice to make the pain go away. The men remove the robot's head casing and reveal a brain, which Blue Steel realizes is as human a brain as his.
What?
As the robot is given an injection of 300 megahertz into its brain, Blue Steel has a flashback, which reveals that Blue Steel is actually Cliff Steel, as he recalls a moment. I know, right? As he recalls a moment 5 years ago in the past.
He looks like Cliff, but he's blue. How could this be?
I know. So Cliff Steel recalls a moment from 5 years ago in the past when he was just a brain in a jar, and he too was demanding that his pain be stopped as he was talking to Niles and Niles's lab assistant, Rita. Cutting back to Key Mondaz in the present, but 4 hours earlier, if that makes sense, we see the team preparing for their mission to investigate Vidalian's operation, with the chief constructing the blue steel robot body, and Rita and Nudge donning disguises to become the Baroness and me son. And trivia factoid, it's here we also learn that Nudge is A, Korean, and B, her real name is Kwon Mi Sun.
What?
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's like the fleshing out her character, finally. Faith also enters the room, her bags packed and her determination set on returning to the Justice League. Despite Nudge's concerns about still needing more training from Faith, she's assured that she'll be fine by the other woman and to have, pun intended, faith in herself.
Oh.
With that farewell out of the way, the Chief transplants Cliff's head to the Blue Steel body and they fly off to Metropolis. And in the present, Rita the Baroness is introduced to the other robot owners before Samson tells her that they're ready for the next bout and she can send in Blue Steel. So Rita presses a button on a controller which sends a signal to Cliff, who makes his way out into the arena where he's greeted by the cheering crowd and the current champion undefeated robot who is named Slice and Dice. Yeah. Cliff leaps over his opponent's head, trying to rip out cabling, but receives a massive electric shock for his troubles. And as he gets up from the ground, Slice and Dice knocks him back further with a massive punch before bringing down its saw blade fist, slicing off Cliff's left arm. Take a drink.
Oh, no.
Cliff then scurries beneath his opponent, and with his remaining good arm, he lifts Slice and Dice up over his head. And in the owner's viewing room, Mi-Sun cheers on Blue Steel, but Dr. Vidalian cautions her to not be too quick to celebrate their droid's victory. And it's at that moment that Slice and Dice shoots his spinning saw blade out of its arm, allowing it to fly through the air and slice Blue Steel's head in half. The top half of the head drops to the floor with a loud blonk, and Slice and Dice raises a foot and stomps down very hard on it. Scrung!
Scrung.
And that's where that one ends.
Awesome. So I think we should just go straight into issue 6 rather than, and we'll discuss them both together as a package.
Let's.
As a crap sandwich. this second one is Doom Patrol number 6. It came out, it had a cover date of January 2005. Actually came out November the 24th, 2004. Cost $2.50, same as the other one. Edited by Mike Carlin. It is titled, A Brain is a Terrible Thing to Waste. There's lots of things being wasted here. It's written and penciled by John Byrne. It's inked by Doug Hazelwood. Lettered by Jared K. Fletcher. And colored by Alex Blayart. And the cover shows Rita embiggened fighting lots of little robots. Larry's there. Negative Man. Cliff's there. He's blue. Don't let that fool you. It's actually Cliff. it's not the most attractive picture of Rita. And she does have a robot on the side of her head pulling at the side of her mouth, which must be horrible. Mm. It's like having a tiny monkey on your face. Yucky. Yes. Anyway. Let's get inside this bad boy.
Please.
So, in another pointless flashback to 6 hours ago, we see that Grunt the gorilla with four arms is so stupid that he can't tell Robot Man is the same person when his metal is blue instead of copper-coloured. Anyway, in the present, which is slightly before the cliffhanger, so not really the present, but this is where we're picking up the action, Slice and Dice, as before, fires a blade that slices Cliff's head horizontally in half, but in a stunning twist that was hardly at all telegraphed completely in the previous issue, Cliff keeps fighting and talking. What? Is his brain not in his head? Because in the previous issue, we did see that Niles was carrying Cliff's brain towards the robot body and there was a hole in the middle of the chest. Anyway, didn't see that coming. But Cliff grows a periscope out of his severed head. Apparently, that he's configured to do that. Good. And he wins the fight. But oh no, some guy knocks Rita's glasses off, or the Baroness's glasses off, and Dr. Vidalian grabs them to fix. Oh no, it's very tense. Will he discover that she is Rita because she's not wearing glasses? You know, as a shapeshifter, I thought Rita could just change her face to look like other people, you know? Madame Rouge definitely did that. She imitated old men and things like that, didn't she?
Yeah, I can't recall Rita ever really changing her face before, though.
No. Anyway. Anyway, Rita and Nudge head downstairs to check with Cliff. He tells them how all the robots contain human brains. Oh, dear. And Rita then shares the tale of how Dr. Vidalian actually worked with Niles, and he was an arsehole. And he stormed off because he was abusing lab animals. I mean, we know that is Niles' hobby as well, but apparently he wasn't doing it the right way. but their flashbacking is interrupted by Vidalian returning with her glasses, which she is wearing on the page before she gets handed them somehow. Interesting. Anyway, I guess the writer and the artist got confused about what they were doing. he admires Cliff's body and asks how Cliff manages his phantom pain, the concept of phantom pain introduced in the last issue, and Robot Man suddenly responds that he got used to it, and he declines the offer of Verdi's techno solution, which is like this. It looks like a taser that you plug in and gives you drugs.
Yeah.
Drug taser. Nice. Meanwhile, in Metropolis, Larry Trainer, in his GIMP outfit, has released his negative energy. He's having it flying around for a bit of fun, and naturally he sees something happening, and there is a giant green dinosaur chasing a woman, and he intercepts the dinosaur and herds it away, and it vanishes because, you know, a dinosaur would outrun a man made of light energy. yeah, anyway. That's probably nothing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back at Robot Wars, there's some robot fighting going on. And Rita says, this is almost getting boring. I agree, Rita. She decides to go to the powder her nose, which is a euphemism usually for going to the toilet. But she doesn't go to the toilet. She goes downstairs and sees some Stormen loading and robots loading crates of those drug taser things. And this is enough for Rita to intercept them, and she embiggens herself and squashes all the robots and chucks them in the back of one of the trucks and then twists it so they can't get out and then sneaks back before Vidalian notices she's gone. Son, who we, you know, remember that's Nudge, she says, did you find anything? Only more than enough, she tells her. Vidalian hears them whispering and just says, perhaps we had a long talk, and Reed says, Nudge says, no, I think maybe it's time you started talking, Dr. Vidalian, and he is compelled to talk. So we are reminded at this point that Nudge has mind control powers and can force people to do things. So she forces Vidalian to tell the story of how after he faked his death and disagreed with local law enforcement, he became a hobo until he was found by a group of very wealthy people who discovered him and wanted him to make him an offer. So, you know, the wealthy people are obviously looking at the hobo population for mad scientists. So good for them.
Yeah.
And so they funded him to sort of build robots with human brains in them based on the research that he and Niles have been doing with Cliff as the subject and create underground robot wars. So no one ever explained why they needed brains in them.
No.
Yeah, anyway, but he got human brains, so he found derelicts, drug addicts. So these are hobo robos, I'd like to say. Yeah, but he's then interrupted, and that breaks the spell because Cliff has won his latest battle. And Nudge, of course, lets him walk out of there, even though she can mind control him. And his bodyguard says, you were getting awfully chatty. Anyway, but he thinks the time has come to move against Baroness von Hartog. Yeah, but, you know, Cliff goes back downstairs and one of the robots is getting ready and he's in a bit of pain, so they give the robot a drug. And the guy helping the robot says, I've got a spare zapper if you're interested. So Cliff walks out of there with one of those. Oh, dear. Meanwhile, Larry is telling Niles about the dinosaur and Niles isn't really believing him. But... you know, he says, oh, it probably hasn't got anything to do with Crucifer's vampire dimensional portals.
And you go,
probably not. Why are we being reminded of that? but, you know, Niles is concerned and said, if this dinosaur is real, we really ought to get out of this current story and get ready for the next one. So go and get Rita and Cliff and Nudge.
So, and wrap things up.
Yeah, wrap things up because there's velociraptors on the news or something. So excitement. Yeah, so... anyway, they're about to do another robot war, but the jig is up and they are surrounded by robots and guards and everyone has guns and they're all pointing at Rita and Cliff and Nudge. And Rita says, so you did recognize me? And he said, no, I didn't recognize you. What are you talking about? What I recognized was the technological style and it was the signature of my old partner, Niles Calder. What?
Oh.
The guy who puts robots brains in robots has recognized another brain in another robot as being related to the research he did.
Fancy that.
What are the odds?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, wackiness ensues. Everyone starts fighting. Nudge starts throwing robots around. Rita embiggens. Cliff intercepts a bullet that's meant for Nudge. Woo, close. Larry arrives just in time and starts zapping robots. And, you know, Dr. Vidalian's bodyguard is ready to get down on the Doom Patrol with his guns. And Dr. Vidalian shoots him in the back of the head. It's his plan, apparently.
Well, they can't leave any loose ends.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. Anyway, then he runs away. And he blows up all the spectators, the wealthy people watching the robot wars. He runs into this room that's got a really big door and slams it shut, and Cliff can't get it open. But Rita shrinks down and manages to slip through, and she's chasing him, and he locks himself in a room, and then it explodes with a green glow. And, yeah, there's a body inside. So I guess the guy who faked his death by blowing himself up in the past is probably dead at this point by getting blown up in the present. So that would be a safe assumption, don't you think?
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Anyway, 3 hours later, John Byrne, very big on telling us when things are happening. They're back at Key Mordaz, the Doom Patrol's base, and Niles is telling them they've done a good job, even though all those people got killed and they could have stopped that if they'd, you know, just controlled Dr. Vidalian a little better. Anyway, that's my editorializing, not Niles's. And we got that dangerous narcotic off the street. And Cliff is leaving, and Niles says, "Oh, it's time to put you back into your regular body." He says, "In a minute, I've got to go feed my goldfish before I forget." And we see Cliff is carrying one of the drug zappers. Ooh. Say no, Cliff. Just say no. Yeah. So I'm going to call it, this is the most boring Doom Patrol issue I've ever read, these two. This is the most boring story. It's the Adventures of the Boring Patrol, and everything happens in the most boring way possible. Sorry.
No. Let it out, my friend. Let it out.
Zero suspense?
Yeah. It's not a great story. I say this every time we look at Burn issues. The art's fine. It's just... And the flashbacks. My God. He loves a flashback.
Why can't we tell this story in a linear fashion? Why do we always have to go back and forwards the whole time? You know, before when they're ready and... You know.
I guess that's his way of trying to, I don't know, introduce some tension and some mystery. But it just doesn't prolongs work. A boring story.
Yeah. You know what's missing? Like, if you look at Doom Patrol Volume 1, there were mad scientists with clock faces and, you know, doing crazy things and freezing time in spots and, you know,
yeah,
all this craziness going on. And people could, you know, animal, vegetable, mineral man and, you know, and no one was sort of limited by what they could do. They just did whatever it was all spectacular and entertaining and crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, this is just a guy who used to work with Niles, and he, you know, like if Dr. Vidalian was a human with a robot brain, that would be, you know, something Doom Patrol worthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
why can't you just build robots to fight? Why do you need human brains in them? Why does someone get to bring along another robot with a human brain to introduce into your fight and you're not suspicious? I mean, it makes no sense. I don't understand. It's so boring too. Like, you could get any kid, you could say, "Kid, I want you to write a story about robot wars." And they'd give you a fantastic story. Any kid. But, not this one.
Well, yeah, I think it's I don't know if it's properly explained, but I think it's just rich people who are bored decided that fighting robots would be a good form of entertainment. And let's put human brains in them. Yeah, for some reason. I don't think that's fully explained ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I knew this one was coming up, and I was like, "Oh God."
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't get why, if you want Cliff to go undercover, why you just have a blue version of Cliff. It's like, you know, if I painted you blue, Mike, and pretended that you weren't Mike, and everyone was fooled.
Yeah. It's just. Yeah.
Sorry, I've got an image of me spray painting you blue now.
That's one of us. Yeah. I'm trying to think, when did... what's that movie with Ben Stiller in it?
Zoolander?
Zoolander. What? I wonder if this came out around the same time as that.
Probably before, I would say.
Yeah, it just seems a bit... I don't know. Every time I see the words blue steel, it just makes me think of his idiotic voice in that movie.
Yeah.
So it's
so boring. And I don't like Rita being a lab assistant to Niles as her origin.
That's another. He's so intent on ignoring all of the patrol's history except for the one he's creating himself. And I think that's part of the reason why he's so hell-bent on flashbacks. Say, hey, you know, here's something that happened in the past to, you know, flesh out the history of this team and to help you forget what's come before. It's like, John, no.
Yeah, but and what was with Faith? Faith left the Justice League to join the Doom Patrol for 5 issues, and all she did was do one test on Nudge.
Yep.
That's the entire point of her leaving the Justice League. Why? Why couldn't anyone have done that?
Yeah.
Why couldn't Niles have done that test? Why couldn't Rita? Why couldn't Cliff? Why couldn't Larry the Gimp? I don't know. I don't know why any of these things. I don't understand. It's this makes me want to read Paul Kupperberg issues so badly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not bogged down.
I don't know how I feel about Rita's quote-unquote disguise in this. She's kind of falling out of her dress.
She's wearing a fur coat with no bra, basically.
Yeah, and a long black dress, which is cut very low.
And that sort of 70s headscarf, super tight headscarf thing.
Yeah, and I guess...
that embiggens with her. It all embiggens with her. I don't get it.
Well, no, remember when they were fighting the Arctic asparagus monsters? She revealed that anything she touches also embiggens with her.
Oh, yes, good. So, why do you need to explain that?
God, I'm becoming really good at burn knowledge now. Which might be handy in a few weeks, but we won't say why.
Gosh.
It happens. It's got robots fighting and an old rival of the Chiefs and okay.
Hmm. But it's boring. It's so boring. It's just like, it's just a regular guy. He's made a drug. Cliff wants the drug. Why does Cliff want the drug? I mean, Byrne has invented this robot brain, combo phantom pain thing that bothers brains in robots just so he can do this story about Cliff wanting to have a drug.
Like, yeah. Which.
Why not invent that and do something interesting?
I can't recall if there's any further plot involving Cliff and any phantom pain. I can't recall if the juice thing is ever followed up on, but there was one line in this that did make me actually laugh when Larry the Gimp is communicating with Niles and telling him about, there are dinosaurs on the streets. And Niles says, are you certain of this? We're not still sure of the full effects of you hosting the negative man spirit, perhaps you hallucinated. And then Larry says, and perhaps that girl just likes to scream while she jogs.
Yeah.
That did make me laugh.
Well, there's one bit. That's good. Yeah. But I mean, it's the boring new adventures of the boring patrol at this point.
Yeah. Fair play.
I'm sorry. I'm struggling with this. It's worse than I imagine.
Well, you're very fortunate that you had people out there help you get these issues.
Thank you so much, Doug and Darren and Ruth.
In other words, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. It's a service to our listeners.
Yeah.
But, I was bummed to hear that they're not collecting the Rachel Pollack run anymore. The trade's been cancelled.
Mm.
But on the bright side, there is no trade of this one in the works.
At this stage.
Never. It will never happen.
Right. I think we've doomsplained as much as we possibly can before we get nasty.
Yep. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's all good. And now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom, where we inspect and read out and laugh with and at your answers to the question of the week, which this week is, what comic habit have you broken? And first up, we heard from Big Tim Styles, who's at Big Tim Styles. And he said, a comic habit that I've broken, the need to have unbroken runs of my favorites. I was a hardcore X guy and bought shitty issues for months at a time, saying, it'll get better soon. But I learned it's okay to drop a title if you don't dig a run and pick up again after.
Preach it, Brother Tim.
Mm-hmm.
We heard from Ryan Daly, who said, Ryan Daly, there's many podcasts, we won't name them all now. He says, I don't buy any Marvel comics. I pay for the Marvel Digital Unlimited service so I can read back issues, but I won't buy any actual issues, whether paper or digital.
Cash Flag at Rebus02 said, seconded. I don't buy Marvel anymore since I have it all, mostly, with that service, except for issues for the podcast. I try to get physical copies if I can.
Right. Do you Marvel Unlimited, Mike?
I'm going to thirded Ryan and Cash's answer and say I don't buy Marvel at all now. That's the comic habit that I've broken.
Ooh.
As far as I'm concerned, Marvel Comics ended at the end of Secret Wars.
Ooh.
Secret Wars 3, if we're being pedantic. And I just feel like they're putting so much effort into their movies. That I'll just go watch the movies.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've often wished that DC movies were as good as DC comics and Marvel comics were as good as Marvel movies.
Yes, that's yes. A fair call. But yeah, I just got bored with the umpteen. I mean, yes, Marvel does. I mean, DC does events and crossovers and that as well. But Marvel, my God, they were doing them so much that I was like, yeah, no, I'm done. See you later.
Right. We heard from Clinton Robson at Coffee and Comics, Coffee and Comics blog on Twitter. And he said, I no longer read ahead 6 months worth of synopsises, nor do I continually read a bad series from a sense of loyalty. Did those both way too many times, mostly in conjunction with each other. Good call.
Fair call, yeah. Bob Gartner Ellis said, so many. Just a few. One, I don't read solicitation copy. Two, stop listening to interview podcasts. They spoil future books. And three, I can now switch paper to digi on same series depending on price and availability. Okay, I burned out the last of the collector gene in me.
Ooh. Wow, that's impressive. We heard from J. David Weeder. He does a Daredevil podcast. He's cool. He said, I've actually stopped buying single issues and moved to trades. This is a move I couldn't have fathomed making only a few years ago. That's what I did.
You'd be loving that, wouldn't you?
And I do love that. I mean, the only thing I buy in issues is old stuff that you can't get in trades and new Doom Patrol issues so I can talk about them on the show. Yep. And literally everything else is trades or library.
Yeah, I have a funny feeling that I'll be moving in that direction too next year. Oh, look, it's a reply from Aaron Long at Juice005. He said, I stopped reading people's minds like that guy, Professor X, that you talk about all the time on your Doom Patrol podcast.
Aaron. Get help.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron.
We heard from FKA Jason from the Silver and Gold Family of Podcasts, and he said he has given up reading comics, and he did a sad face emoji.
Oh, and Jay.
I feel sad too.
Yeah.
Way to bring the show down, Jay.
Look, I'll admit I've taken breaks from comics as well. You know, after my X-book purge in the 90s, you know, I was away from comics for quite a few years. It happens. But the good thing is, Jay, is that comics will always be there for you.
Yeah.
when you're ready, I'll be there.
Word.
Anyway, Carl Bakey said, I rarely ever eat anything immediately prior to sitting down and reading my weekly haul. Just say no to sticky, greasy pages. Hashtag mint.
Nice. And hello, Carl. I don't think we've heard from Carl before.
Yes. Thanks for joining us, Carl.
And then we heard from our friend Kevin, or Ostrakos1 as he's known. And he said, he's called Even Whittle Cake Rim on Twitter at the moment because he anagrams his name. Mm-hmm. And he said, buying so much Marvel and DC Comics stuff, they have a tough sell to get me to pick up a new book these days. Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah. Say no to the big two.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see what you are reading from outside the big two, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
We then heard from Comics Couplets, who said that the habit that they've broken is Twitter. So they obviously still need to work on that one because they replied on Twitter.
Right.
Yes.
We heard again from Jonathan Dye at Changing Shades, and he said, buying stuff from habit instead of interest. I just drop titles if there's a crossover that I think is dumb, hashtag Secret Empire, instead of feeding something I don't like. Well, 90% broken anyway. Yeah, crossovers kill books. I mean, you find a nice book and you think, oh, that's good. It's written by someone I like. It's got a good artist. And then, you know, issue 5 is a crossover with an event. You go, ugh.
Yeah.
I do.
And that sounds just like what we talked about on the Doom Clock, issue 5 of Volume 5.
Yeah.
Let's land it right in the middle of Blackest Night.
Yeah.
Anyway, over on the Facebook page, we heard from Jared Driscoll. The habit that Jared's broken is buying comics weekly. The stuff I tend to read does not tend to sell out on Wednesdays, and I probably go to the comic shop once every 4 to 6 weeks. Yes, there's a comic shop less than 2 miles from my house, but there isn't much being released that captures my interest to warrant going on a regular basis.
Wow. Yeah, I can relate. I probably only go into a comic shop like 6 times a year.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, then we heard from Tony Nasser. Who, Tony, you know Tony, is that correct?
I do know Tony. Shout out to Tony. Awesome dude. He actually owns and runs a game and comic and toy shop here in Brisbane called Comic Empire. They're at Stones Corner. They've got so much. Oh, I could say myself broke in his shop.
Just get a job there.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, no, that wouldn't work out well for anyone, I don't think. But Tony, very cool dude, very cool shop. Check out comicempire.com.au if you want to see what they're about. Anyway, what did Tony say?
He said, collecting a title out of habit. Just because I have all of the issues doesn't mean I need to keep collecting until once the wheels have fallen off. True, true.
And I know that Tony is a Doom Patrol fan, and he is avoiding the burn run completely.
Whoa.
He's got everything else, just not the burn run. So, yeah. I
can probably endorse that decision.
So our pain is your gain, Tony, and everyone else. Anyway, moving on, we heard from Max Trevor, and the habit that Max has broken is buying new monthly floppies. Over the past year, I've switched over to digital for my new single-issue fixes, but only older issues in collected or single issue form. If a newer storyline that I've read digitally really sticks with me, I'll pick up a collection later on. The amount of space this has saved alone has already made it all worthwhile.
Mm. Yeah, digital's really changed the game for everybody, hasn't it?
Yeah.
You can sample and you can switch over and, you know, you have a lot less stuff around your house with digital. I think the main drawback is I find it really hard to track what I have digitally the way I do with a physical copy.
Oh, yeah.
Like you don't see a pile of digital books and go, oh, I've got to read that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we heard from David Foster, and he said, my bad habit was paying for comics with a credit card. Back in my callow youth, whenever I handed the card to the cashier, I would semi-ignore the amount due because I knew that I could defer the payments. I ran up an unhealthy balance by only paying the monthly minimum and incurring interest charges. Before it got too out of hand, I switched to writing checks for my comics, and that way, by meticulously writing down the cost on an official piece of paper, I became much more aware of the real money I was spending on my habit. I've been doing it that way for over 20 years, and I've never bounced a check in a comic shop. Nice.
Well done. Yeah. Fiscally responsible.
Credit cards are the devil's work.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah, if you can get rid of a credit card, do it. It will change your life.
Yep.
Mm. Mm.
Yep. And then we also heard from Joe Crawford, who said, "The habit he's broken is finishing a series just to have a set. I will stop at issue 3 with one to go if I'm not enjoying something."
Hardcore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joe does those things on Twitter where he says, comics read today, and he puts like 50 comics in a picture.
Yes.
The man is a maniac.
Mm-hmm.
And he's reading like he's never read before.
Oh, God. Oh, look. I think we got some emails too, Paul.
Yeah, we heard from Rob Kelly from Fire and Water podcast, Superman Minute, Pod Dylan. He's just popped up on the Thing Minute this week, I've noticed. You listening to the Thing Minute? It's awesome. Anyway, he said, "Hey, fellas, sorry I didn't answer last week's question. I drew a blank when I first heard it and didn't get back to it on time. So for what it's worth, my answer would be, this is the comic that got away, thing that got away." He said, "Detective Comics 140. When I was a teen, my LCS got a small batch of late 1940s, early 1950s detectives, and since I didn't have a car or a girlfriend, shocking, I know, I spent all my money on comics. I bought almost every old book they had except for Detective 140, which had a Riddler cover. I'd spent so much money on these books that I had to leave a few behind, and this one just got lost in the shuffle. Since this was pre-internet and there was no quick and easy way for me to look that book up, if I had, I would have learned that Tech 140 is the Riddler's first appearance."
Oh, my God.
"I had always assumed the character debuted in the early 40s, a contemporary of the Joker, Catwoman, etc., not later on, so I didn't perceive the book as one that I should move heaven and earth to get. Had I bought it, it would probably be worth many tens of thousands now, since the Batman movie came out a year or so later and everything related skyrocketed in value. As to this week's question, my answer is, I no longer read books as they come out. I find most single-issue comics to be so slight and forgettable that if a whole month goes by and I can't remember what happened last issue. So now I tend to wait until there are 4 or 5 issues out and then just read them in a chunk. I miss reading a series so compelling that I need to read it every month. Still waiting for you guys to cover a Doom Patrol comic I've read." I think we've covered them already. I think you've read a couple of Volume 1 Doom Patrols, haven't you?
Rob, I
heard you say. Yeah, certainly one's in a digest. But we've already covered them way back in the first year of the show, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, nice to hear from you, Rob. Thank you.
Unless he's just really hanging out for Volume 5.
Probably not.
Rightio. And we also got an email from Ange. Dr. Ange, everyone's favourite doctor.
You knucklehead, Ange. Sorry.
Ange writes, "First off, thanks for all the sympathy about the one that got away, Flanger. Like rubbing salt in the wound, I just picked the scab off. Second, I think you hit the nail on the head about these Pollack issues and why I think I left them. It seems like she had topics she wanted to cover in comic form, transgender issues, menstruation as power, the Kabbalah, and forced them into a Doom Patrol comic, instead of writing a Doom Patrol comic that had issues she wanted to cover. To put it differently, if you can remove the Doom Patrol from a story and plug in another group of heroes, and it would read nearly the same, then you haven't written a Doom Patrol story. Instead, you've written a story about the topic featuring the Doom Patrol. Compare this to Morrison playing on themes and histories he liked. We learned about the origin of LSD, but in the context of the Magic Bus and the New Brotherhood. He explores schools of art, Fauvism, Cubism, Dada, in the first story. But those are clearly Doom Patrol stories with those flourishes, not the other way around. I was wondering if hearing you guys review those books would make me want to go out and buy them. The answer is no. As for the question of the week, one habit I have broken out of is bagging and boarding and cataloguing all the books I buy. There is an official collection, bagged, boarded, documented in Comic Book DB, but then many bargain books,
quote-unquote bathroom copies and runs that have been culled a bit end up in an easy reading pile, a couple of long boxes on the floor without formal organisation. As always, great show. Thanks, Ange.
Thanks, Ange. So, Mike, what habit do you no longer have with comics?
Well, like I said, I got away from Marvel. They're kind of dead to me.
Ooh.
I watch the movies. I'm tempted to get a couple of issues I'm missing from the Avengers run that led up to Secret War, just for completion's sake, but it's not a priority. But yeah, I'm just kind of over Marvel. I'll watch their movies, maybe some of their TV shows. Yeah. But I just find other publishers doing more interesting stuff.
Wow.
What about you, Paul?
Well, I've already spoken before on the show how I switched to trades on the whole. But one thing I completely stopped doing is I used to love reading the preview pages where they'd say, you know, here are the first six pages of a new comic, you know, coming out next week or 2 weeks' time. And I used to devour those because I was so into what was happening and what was coming. And now I just want to wait. I mean, oftentimes I don't want to read a story because I'm going to get a trade of it. And, you know, I'd rather go in blind, as it were. And, you know, but that's not to say I'm blindly ignorant of if a book is really bad, I hear about it, and you know that informs what I buy as well. And that's one of the advantages of being a trade waiter, is you can be a bit pickier. Yeah. But it's interesting what you're saying about Marvel and how they've dropped the ball on your interests. I mean, I will say there is one Marvel book that I'm going to pick up and trade, and that's the Garth Ennis Punisher, The Platoon, with Goran Pavlov. Because I love Garth Ennis' Punisher, and it's just great to have him come back and do a one more. He'll probably do five more one mores, but I mean, that appeals to me because I've got a big collection of Garth Ennis' Punisher stuff. So,
okay,
yeah, I'm weird like that.
Yeah, we've all got our own quirks.
Peccadillos.
Yes.
When you cross a woodpecker with an armadillo.
Oh, God. Curse you, Calder. Oh, dear. Well, on that note, I think we'll start signing off. Next week, it's going to be our final show for the year.
Wow.
Going out with a bang with the final two issues of Volume 2, which is 86 and 87.
Farewell to Pollock.
Wow. To 2017.
Jeez. Wow. What a year. What a great year.
Well, and we will have a new question of the week for our final episode. What is that question, Paul?
Well, it's a pretty broad question. Yeah, there'll be several hundred answers that people can think of. Who is your favorite fictional character with a walking stick? A walking stick. Right. Not a Zimmer frame, not a crutch.
A walking stick.
Yep, not a wheelchair, a walking stick.
Not an action chair.
Not an action chair.
A walking stick.
A walking
stick. Okay, yeah. That's an interesting
one. So if anyone
one.
Can think of one, send us a response.
Yep, can't wait to read all those ones.
Ooh. Yeah.
It's going to be a long show.
All right.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, we'll sign off for now. As always, you can get in touch via Wilfred on Twitter, who is at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can check out the Waiting for Doom Facebook page and Doug Zavisha's excellent post on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And that's us done for another episode. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we'll catch you again next week for one more episode. 2017 of Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.
Okay. Let's do a proper show.
Nice.
You can do it.
Yeah, sorry, I was pulling out the script. I wasn't.
I thought you were psyching yourself up.
Need more therapy.
So tell me about this Doom Patrol. And then tell me about your mutter.